butter from the Prime Minister. Honorable Dr. Kennedy Anthony.
Members are tired, and we still have other business to transact, but with your guidance, we shall try to proceed as quickly as we could. Mr. Speaker, in any budget debate, there will always be moments of levity. There will always be moments of laughter. Sometimes the laughter is uncontrollable, and understandably too, there will be flashes of anger from time to time. In this budget debate, I believe we have seen all of this in varying degrees. But essentially, I think that the debate has been conducted with measurable goodwill, and that we are learning once again to be able to laugh with each other and share moments with each other. And I believe that that is always a very good thing, and to use a word that was used in this debate, it's good therapy. But it is also an occasion when very serious and profound statements are made. It is also an occasion, perhaps, when a politician, Mr. Speaker, in a budget debate is tempted to make statements that may reflect certain things about him or her, the beliefs, the approaches to policy making, and indeed may be tempted to speak about things that normally in the course of public life that we don't speak about. In the last few encounters, we have had some of that. And today, there was no difference. No difference. Some pronouncements obviously attract a little more mirth than others. And I recall years ago, Mr. Speaker, the Crusader newspaper had a post-budget article called Budget Duty. Those things that are said that are unforgettable. You will always remember them. And, Mr. Speaker, when I listened to the member for Denver South, I thought there were some statements made in this budget debate that were unforgettable. The member for Denry South said that the honeymoon of this government will soon come to an end. And Mr. Speaker, his exact words were, the honey will go to the moon. Mr. Speaker, the truth is, I wanted to find out how that was possible. How that honey will eventually get to the moon, and I don't know whether the member had something else in mind, but he spoke of honey to the moon. But that was not all, and I think in a moment when he was responding to the member from Catchfield East on certain analysis the member made of the budget, he says that the member for Catchfield East must stop the mirror dance. Mr. Speaker, this had to be a gem. It really was a beauty because, you see, Mr. Speaker, it is so loaded with connotations. But I have known the member for Castries East in years. We have been in the political wilderness for the last couple of years, but we have been side by side over the last couple of years. The truth is, I know a little bit about his habits, but I have never known him to be a dancer. Very shy, retiring dancer who would only... Is there something that I don't know? So, I was tempted, therefore, to ask a member for Denry South to show us the mirror dance. You know, at one time, as a speaker, we had a Kenny dance, so maybe we might now see the mirror dance. So there were the moments of levity, not only on the opposition side, but even on this side. And of course, when the member for Grosley said to the member for Castries Southeast regarding his understanding of certain events, when she said to him, "Stay in your section," that in a special way was a gem. But Mr. Speaker, there was a statement made by the leader of the opposition that took us away from the moments of levity to the moments of seriousness. That anybody who heard that statement should quietly reflect on it, because it affects all the politicians around the table. The member for Castries North, Mr. Speaker, made the point that when untruths are spoken or when certain interpretations, and I'm paraphrasing what the member said, Mr. Speaker, are spoken about a politician, that often we don't know the untold damage that that politician has relatives, that politician has children, that politician has friends, and so on. It was a moment for all of us to reflect on our political inheritance and why it is very important for us to repudiate what has happened in the past. It is a very important statement because, you see, Mr. Speaker, when I reflected on it, inevitably I had to go and think about what I went through, the viciousness with which I was attacked, the malice. But you know what? The leader of the opposition makes an important statement. We need to repudiate it. And in repudiating it, we can make a difference for this country and how we build this country. That is why I said that in any budget debate, yes, there are moments of laughter, levity. Equally, there are occasions when very serious statements are made and they should not be disowned or discarded. I do not interpret the leader of the opposition to be suggesting that while we must conduct our affairs with due respect to each other, that when wrongdoing occurs, that you do not deal with the wrongdoing. Clearly, you have to. Clearly. You need to ensure that you apply the law with its full rigor. Clearly. And I don't interpret him to be suggesting that you should turn a blind eye. But what matters is the respect which ought to take place in public pronouncements and in the discourse that takes place between and among politicians. That having been said, Mr. Speaker, I want very quickly to focus a little more narrowly on the budget that was presented. In truth and in fact, when I analyzed the comments, I did not hear any powerful disagreement with the approach that the government is taking to seek to pull the country together on the economic front. There may have been disagreements about the interpretation of information. There may be disagreements about the application of certain programs and strategies. But overall, there was no fundamental disagreement with the strategy that the government has adopted in this period. We may dispute with each other debt. We may dispute with each other the deficit, and I shall come to that, but not necessarily the fundamentals, the approach to be taken in the crisis that faces us. Mr. Speaker, I want first of all to turn to the contribution of a member for Castries Southeast. And every budget debate, he provides me an opportunity to respond to him, because there are things that he says sometimes that are so outrageous that they defy logic, they defy common sense, they defy understanding. And I mean, I do not mean any insults or any such thing. But what I do mean is that in the face of evidence sometimes, the member still persists to make statements which fly in the face of what is before him. Some members of the opposition quite rarely stayed away from the Roebuck issue. The leader of the opposition came to it, but the leader of the opposition was a little more cautious. He walked gingerly. He skirted it. He tried to diminish their full extent of responsibility and liability, but not so with the member for Task Resources. The essence of his contribution was that we were exaggerating what had occurred, and that in any case, if you're going to quantify loss, then the most that you can quantify is $3 million. If you took people, if you acquired the lands of private citizens, give them back, and that solves your problem. He even disputed the quantum of acres, which the leader of the opposition did not, because the leader of the opposition quite rightly pointed out that we are dealing with 469.5 acres of land. Mr. Speaker, I want to take, first of all, the land that was acquired at Canal. Some 249.72 acres of land is involved. It is true that that land belonged to a Jamaican company that once had intentions of building a hotel in St. Lucia. It is true. But the solution to the problem is not just giving back the people the land. And in any event, the Jamaican company does not want the land anymore. All they want is their cash. But you know what the problem is? The problem, Mr. Speaker, is that the land, the issue of the price to be paid for the land went to arbitration. And a judgment was given in favor of the private landowners. Interest had to be paid on the market value of the land. And so today, a piece of land that might have been worth $17, $18 million is costing the taxpayers of this country over $27 million. More than that. Because of the rising interest. If you decide to apply the logic of the member for Castries or these to hand over back the land, then clearly the government has to pay the interest on the land. So what on earth is he talking about to suggest that liability could simply evaporate into thin air? The harsh reality of this situation. And I would have been restrained in my comments had he not imputed dishonesty to the government in making the facts available. Mr. Speaker, look at what happened in this transaction. The government of St. Lucia and the leader of the opposition decided that they would put the value of the land in shares, in preference shares. But I say this. If this transaction had occurred without a history in this country, then the extent of criticism of it may not have been as serious and severe as it has been. But it occurred in the heels of a rationale which led to a commission of inquiry, which led to serious injury being made about the reputation of a prime minister at the time. And what happened here? What happened here? The very same methodology of sticking with your preferences for the value of what you put in was applied in this transaction. What were the lessons? Did we learn anything? Nothing. And yet the member from Castries Southeast makes these pronouncements today and just disowns it. As if to say that the $11 million, $11.75 million, and the leader of the opposition did not even dispute it because he signed the document. $11.7 million you are paying the bank. My only concern with the position of the leader of the opposition is a suggestion that the thing has nothing to do with the transaction. It has to do with the bank that failed. Meaning that somehow, if the bank had not failed, that's not so. Part of the problem was that the company that had been established to undertake the development, they had started to borrow the money from the bank, but found themselves in a position where they could not have amortized the loan that they had taken. That's the reality. Yes, the bank collapsed, but that was the reality before the collapse. Now, when you listen to the contribution of the member for Castries Southeast, now you're almost tempted to say, well, maybe the government should go and get an opinion to see whether there was negligence in that transaction. Do we wound the country again and go through all of that? Or is it not better for us to say an error was made, a serious mistake was made? It was a misguided transaction, an error of judgment. Therefore, let us take it in stride. These are the things that rear their head. These are the questions that you have to ask. And when you hear that kind of contribution, then you begin to wonder. Then he says he's concerned about St. Bruce's credit worthiness. Because we are making this economy look bad. And that's precisely the problem that we have. The problem that we have is that we are not coming to terms with the reality that faces us and deal with that reality. You know, the contribution of the leader of the opposition was instructive. The leader of the opposition never disputed the figures on the deficit. Never. Never, ever, ever. He explained why the deficit occurred. Of course, some of us may want to question the explanation. But he accepted that that was an issue. But yet, like a scripted text, the member for Castries saw these links with the member for Castries Central and begin to suggest that the situation is not as bad as... The reality is that we have a very big a huge deficit to deal with. And when the member for Central Castries, and that's the only moment I'm going to make a reference to him, says that he has never known a minister of finance to go into a budget with a planned deficit or with a... Does he watch what's happening around him? Is he aware of what's happening around him? Why is Obama facing those challenges? He has a deficit budget in the United States. In fact, he planned the deficit to deal with the problems that he has. What is happening in the UK? The UK economy is contracting. They have a huge deficit. The deficit in the UK is deepening. I mean, when you hear those kinds of statements, then you begin to wonder. Now, I'm not going to replying to the minister, former minister of finance, on the point he made, or the leader of the opposition. But I'm going to reply to the member for Castries Central, and that, as I said, would be the only point at which I will respond to him. Now, if you have actual deficits, you realize deficits in the face of a budget where you planned that you would have, you balance the budget, that you would have a surplus budget. And this is what you plan. Then if it happens that you have the deficit, two things are possible. Only two things. One, and I'm not ascribing this to the minister, former minister of finance, bear me in mind. I'm not. Because I have been in there and I know the challenges. Two things. One, you can blame the administration for deliberately keeping the information away from the public. Because you knew, despite the figures you put in there, that you will never ever come out with a surplus. Alternatively, then, can I argue with gross mismanagement? You knew what the actuals were, but yet you proceeded down that route. Well, clearly, the member of the Central Castries simply does not know that his own logic will drown him. Because that is what he's arguing. And, you know, there's something that is instructive. And I just want, in passing, to mention it. It's very fashionable when you see a new government comes into office and another government goes out. The incoming government argues and says they found no money in the treasury. But you know what? When the election was won by the United Workers' Party in December 2006, one of the things that Sir John said when he presented his capital budget was that he found a surplus that he was able to utilize to finance his capital budget. You never heard him say he found an empty treasury. You have never heard me say I found an empty treasury. I've said the situation is challenging, difficult. Very difficult. I've said before that there were unique problems in the country. I would disagree how we approach the problem. So you have to begin to wonder why that kind of logic, has to be invoked. I just want to say a few words, Mr. Speaker, in response to the comments made by the member for Mikunos. And I want to thank her for making her election proposals available to me, her 14-point plan. I think some of the proposals are interesting. They're very good, and I would want to work with. You need to send yours, Mr. Leader of the Office, and I would want to work some of these matters. But I just want to say two things to her. The first is I noticed that. Not much reference was made to the waterfront in Miku. I am very concerned about the appearance of the waterfront. Maybe it's because of the increasing momentum of age, and my desire to sit at the waterfront and watch the sea as it rolls. Maybe it's that. But I believe that in these villages, we are not making use of our waterfront so that it becomes a social amenity for the people of the community. You have a problem. I have a problem in Newport South. There are others, I'm certain, with those problems. Globally, There's been some working closely over the last couple of years. And I wanted just to suggest to you that one of the things I would like to do this year is to actually get a consultancy going to see what we can do with the waterfront in Mikum as well as the waterfront along the Beaufort Beach. Now, don't you worry, because not many of the other members here can speak about the waterfront the way you and I can. About the waterfront. I mean, the member for Denry South, I think, is listening with keen interest, but he knows that there has been good investment in Denry South, and that is continuing. But it is an issue that I'm very concerned about, because when I do visit your constituency, visit the village, I'm very distressed by the appearance of that waterfront. And we have to begin to think of ways and means to rehabilitate our infrastructure so as to provide people with some social options, that some kind of pride, and that we're not making use of the environment that we have inherited. That's my point. And I want to interest you with that, and I want to indicate that I'm going to try to get a consultancy so that we can see down the road what can be done. That being said, the issue of the health center, I think you are wise not to emphasize it too much. Your pain is understood, but we have a responsibility to correct it despite the historical antecedents, for want of a better term, because I think that was a terrible error of judgment at the time that when the former government came in, contract was in place, the contract was stopped, and that was very unfortunate. But the reality is that we do have to search for ways and means to resolve that problem for the people of Biko, and I'm going to ask the Minister of Health to work very closely with you to see if we can make some progress on these matters. So, Mr. Speaker, I want quickly to come to some issues raised by the Leader of the Opposition. I want to start first with his response to the issue of the growth rate. There can be no doubt that the error in the growth rate for St. Lucia will cause us and has caused us some embarrassment. Because other institutions are aware of the growth rate that was announced, and they're aware that subsequent analysis does not confirm that growth rate. So we have a problem. And I think it is fair to say that anybody who read the language of the budget address, that while that situation is mentioned, nevertheless, the language that was used cannot really be described as totally delicate or language that was particularly hurtful. And I think you will agree with me that the language could have been even more biting, harsher, more severe. And there's good reason for that. Very good reason for that. And I understand the pain and agony of the member for Castries North and where that is concerned, because truth be told, we are all politicians, and we all have to rely on information and advice from public officers. truth of the matter is, though, the conventions require that even if we get the wrong advice and we go public with it, we have to take responsibility for it. That is why in a place like Japan, ministers resign left, right, and center. The slightest error, they resign. And the convention is in our system that we have to take the responsibility. And I want to tell everybody sitting around this table that I too have learned the very hard way. When you see you are standing before an inquiry, a commission of inquiry or otherwise, you are alone. Even if you acted on the advice of public officers, of senior public officers, when the time comes, they're not around to protect you. I watched it. I have no malice in my heart. None. None. It was hurtful to watch public officers disowning knowledge of decisions of this government which was communicated to them, which they read about. Hurtful. But the denunciation was restrained. And my point is that when you see you act on that advice and the advice is faulty, I'm afraid that you have to take the responsibility. That is why you have to be very cautious about how you accept that advice. And what you don't, I will believe the member for Castries is not to understand me fully when I say this. In preparation of this budget, there are issues that I requested advice from the Ministry of Finance on. They offered that advice, and the Cabinet decided not to accept that advice and take a different route in dealing with the matter. But that doesn't mean that you lose respect for the professionals that give you the advice. It's just that you have a different opinion on how the issue should be dealt with. Because in the Ministry of Finance, as in any other ministry, there is a historical baggage that people look at things in a certain way. And the toughest challenge is to get them to think differently, to think outside of the box. And you constantly have to challenge, as I'm sure the member of the Castries now did, challenge the people around you to say, is there a different way? Can we look at this in a different way? However, the member of Castries North said that he's not in here to play with figures are figures. This is not necessarily ingenious because some figures are in fact inaccurate. Then he went on to suggest that the director of statistics should be fired. No. That is where we part. And he rightly drew my attention to my own statements regarding public officers, but I think he would agree that even if those statements may not have been, how shall we put it? Delicate is the word he used. Nevertheless, it never reached to that extent as he himself spoke of today. Now, the Minister of Finance volunteered information that he made sure that the Director of Statistics put the information about the growth rate on record because he had anxiety. I wasn't aware of this until today, and I thank him for volunteering the information. But of course, as a member for Sufre would say, that allowed me to ensure that what I had to say was evidence-based. Is that the word you use? Yes. So I asked for the letter. This is what the letter says. I'm going to read it into the record. It is a memorandum from the Director of Statistics dated April 4th, 2011. It says as follows. The preliminary estimates of the GDP gross value added as at basic prices in constant prices are forwarded for your attention. Based on actual data sources available at this time, we believe the GDP estimates in current and constant prices produced by my office accurately reflect the change in value added during 2010 and prior years. Note, these figures are compiled based on the standards established in UN SNA 93 and are therefore expressed at basic prices. This represents a departure from the UN SNA 68, which was the basis for the publication of this information in prior years. The two data sources which have had the most significant impact on the computation of the rate of growth shown for 2010 are data visitor arrivals / expenditure produced by the St. Lucia Tourist Board and the data on trade and import of goods produced by the Customs and Excise Department. Then he goes on to say, and these are the critical words, while we bear some responsibility for ensuring the integrity of these data sources, we do not, however, directly control or supervise their creation. In addition, we do have some concerns about the quality of the data on imports, and we will continue to work on ensuring that these matters are addressed. April 4th, 2011. This is 2012. That's last year. That was your year. Shall I read it again? Yes, yes. But those words, I think, are important. Because it's an important point, I think. While we bear some responsibility for ensuring the integrity of these data sources, we do not, however, directly control or supervise their creation. In addition, we do have some concerns about the quality of the data on imports, and we will continue to work on ensuring that these matters are addressed. In the event that there are any issues with our data sources, or if we receive updated data or data we believe to be more accurate, we reserve the right to revise the estimates of the GDP which we make accordingly. Clearly, Mr. Leader of the Opposition, the Director of Statistics qualified his opinion. He warned you that there were risks. That's the point. That there were risks. He says that he don't control the sources of information, but you should be cautious. In other words, I think that a prudent Minister of Finance should have hearkened to that advice, and if there was a decision to use those growth rate figures, then say what he has said. I think you owe him an apology.
Mr. Speaker, I think on a point of clarification, if you'd allow me that. Just to say that what transpired was that, as I said earlier on, during the budget discussion, when the figures were indicated to me, I questioned the credibility of these figures, whether they were correct. I indicated that they needed to ensure that those figures were corrected and that the PS should have written the Director of Statistics to caused him to indicate in writing that the figures given 4.4 were indeed correct and he can stand by it. Now, I'm not even too sure whether this is the letter, because I never saw the letter. I was assured afterwards that he had written and confirmed that his figures are correct.
You see, you have in fact added and amplified, but you see, I'm afraid that you have found yourself in a little more hot water because you are conceding that you relied on a letter you never saw. But I'm not going to say more about this because the point is made, but I want to suggest, and I know you to be a gentleman, I wanted to suggest, this doesn't have to be any public demonstration, I wanted to suggest that you should apologize to him. It's not fair to him, because in one stroke, his reputation has been undermined, affected, and ruined. Now, to be fair, there are moments when I have had anxiety coming out of the statistics of the statistical department. I recall one budget year, and we received some employment figures, and I refused to carry it, because I said that those figures don't appear to me to be accurate. So it happens. But I believe in this instance, you may need to reconsider and handle this matter privately. Now I now turn to some of the points that you raised. You use a term, use a Creole term, and you have to remind me, de chaussée salaison. Say that again. De coucher sa salaison. That's the term that was used. Now, in fairness, I had a little difficulty to understand the contours of your logic. You know, I believe, Mr. Leader of the Opposition, that one of the greatest compliments that an opposition can get is when a government says, you had a program, I'm going to keep it, I'm going to follow it. There is no greater affirmation and commendation than that. And I will tell you that your government suffered because there were misguided decisions about several initiatives of the former government. Fraud was one. Fraud was denatured, destroyed, because of the lack of vision by the minister you had then to understand that even under proud UWP supporters got ownership of the land just as Labour supporters got. So we had no choice. So, destroyed until attempts were made to resurrect it was the end. I learned. That is why when our cabinet sat down, I said we must keep this program. This is a good program. For example, despite my disagreements with your Minister of Local Government, and I tell you this, if you see the Speaker had allowed him to take the route that he was going, then today you would have had an experience you never would have forgotten. Because it would have opened the doors for me to say what I have to say on other matters. But the Speaker wisely decided to enforce the rules. And so, it doesn't mean that everything that his ministry did that we disown. In fact, there's one project that we are building on. And I don't know if you're the one who had him to do it. That is a project that the government makes an allocation, I believe, of about $100,000 per year to the local government bodies to do small work. It's a good project. It's a good program. Because it means that the little drains, the little footpaths, the little expenses for the poor people to help them out, the little footbridge that they need to go to their homes, that the council can do it. It's a good project. Where we had problems was the management of the project, the use of the funds, and that is why there's an audit being undertaken of those councils, because of the abuse. But I don't mean that should have destroyed the project. So when you use that term, and then you said, well, la panisa les ou baila, you can faire même baila, you can faire avant. I don't know why you put it that way. I don't know why you put it that way, because we were seeing value in what you did. And we were saying to you that it's a good project, we'll therefore continue it in York, for example. You created the Constituency Development Fund project.
Honorable Prime Minister, you have 15 minutes
Are you serious?
Remaining.
I will do my best to speak you and it's winding up to reach that better hour. So, what I'm trying to say, therefore, is this, that I don't understand, on the one hand, you recognize the value of some of these projects, ask us to give you more assistance and support for it, but on the other hand, you denounce it, and you say, well, it's our own, there's nothing there, nothing new. Ah, come on, come on, come on, come on, come on. And then there is that remarkable position on that. I want to urge you, Mr. Leader of the Opposition, to rethink that. You see, and if there's one thing I want to urge you to do, is to be very cautious in the advice that you get from the member from Castle Central. You see, before you came in the House, he articulated this view that the statement you made, which I quoted on page, the statement you made, which I quoted on page 23, was a statement of qualification. And I believe he's talking about this statement here. Quote, I wish to reaffirm the commitment of this government to its implementation by April 2012, mindful of the socio-economic responsibilities of government. And those words, mindful of the socio-economic responsibilities of government, he, the lawyer, interprets that to mean that in that statement was the possibility that the Minister of Finance would not implement VAT in April 2012. And that is his explanation for saying that you issued a caution that you may not implement VAT. But if the member from Miku North, who is a distinguished academician, was not on the other side, I might have asked you to give me an interpretation of that statement. Because very clearly, mindful of the socioeconomic responsibility of the government must necessarily have meant making sure that you do not impose VAT in an onerous way, that you don't prejudice the rights of poor people. The very same thing. Not that it means that you're not going to, you may not introduce VAT in 2012. It couldn't conceivably have meant that. So I don't know why he latched on to it, and you latched on to it. Let us build a pact. You made the point about national security. And I agree with you, we need to work together with national security. And subject to further discussion with the cabinet, I want to suggest that we set up a parliamentary oversight committee of a crime. If you'd accept this invitation, we proceed. In the same way, I have invited you to be part of a parliamentary oversight in respect of that. You know in your heart that whatever the historical positions may have been, that is absolutely essential to this country at this time. It's not a panacea, but it's important. And yes, all of us have a moral responsibility to ensure that due protection is extended to our respective constituencies. To the poor, yes. To businesses, yes. to the tourism industry, yes, to fishermen, yes, wherever they might be. Now, why don't we evolve that compact, that understanding? You started it, you initiated it, and incidentally, you quoted the decision taken at the ECCB many, many, many years ago. That was nothing more than an assessment to determine whether that should be introduced. And anybody who is familiar with the history of the ECCB will tell you that St. Lucia was always hesitant. Yes, I uttered the words that is potentially oppressive. And interestingly, when the member from Castro Central spoke, he first read out that he said potentially oppressive, and then he took off the word potentially and he started to say oppressive, 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 so that it can resonate. I will never disown the position which I articulated, that there are regressive elements and potentially oppressive elements in that. There is no doubt in my mind, and no one around me can convince me otherwise, but that does not mean that I do not recognize that there are other advantages and that there is other value in that. That is why I am exceedingly careful about ensuring that the poor of this country is protected as they are. That is why my cabinet agreed that VAT will not be imposed on water and electricity at this time, for the very same reason, because of its potentially oppressive nature to certain sectors. It's a consumption-based tax. That's the reality. There are people who see it as a great equalizer. So intellectually, I am aware of what the position is, but I also understand I have a responsibility to the country to make sure that, necessary as it is to implement, it is implemented in a way that does not cause injury. Then, of course, we turn to the issue of property tax. You said that nothing was said about exemptions and so on, and pensions, but the statement is clear and categorical, and you make a very important point. You make a very important point, which I subscribe to. In your delivery, you emphasize that we have a situation in St. Lucia where there are rich persons or well-off individuals coming in, non-nationals and others, coming in, they build their homes, they have the income, but because of the exemption which existed before, they do not pay any property tax. And I think you made the point that that is correct. No. You recognize it. I recognize it. Let's press ahead. And so you're having categorical language in paragraph 3 with the above measures, page 31, with the above measures, it will no longer be necessary to retain the exemptions, so these exemptions will be eliminated and replaced with a threshold based on market value of their residential property. The exemptions go. That's the reality. But to ensure the fairness that exists, what we're trying to do, Mr. Speaker, is that the persons who are not paying, we are exempted, we make that allowance available to the other taxpayers to ensure some balance. And this gives me an opportunity, Mr. Speaker, to come back to a matter that was raised by the member for Castro Southeast. Speaker, the member for Castro Southeast expresses concerns about the fact that we are introducing a regime that will exempt persons who engage in illegal behavior from the duties, the
the cost associated with reconnection. Now, I want to say that it's a matter that we agonized over. We did. And I want to say the lawyer in me cautioned that we have to be very careful that we do not reward people who engage in illegal behavior. But while that may be the case, you have to look at the thing, the problem in its totality. What is happening to our people? Our people get disconnected for water because they can't afford to pay. They're out of work. The bills are too much. And some of the people who may have lawfully had connections, because they can't pay their reconnection fees, what did they go and do? They need the water. They then go and connect illegally. We have a system in place that is driving them to illegal behavior. Illegal behavior is not to be condoned. I accept that. But we can't operate a society that all it does is to create impossible situations for our citizens and drive them into behavior that is unacceptable. In other words, and what I'm trying to say is this, that our reconnection fees, the kinds of arrangements that have been put in place for people to say are such that they cannot meet those standards. That is why we have to begin to make those kinds of adjustments, and I accept that down the road, WASCO would have to look at those situations.
Honorable Prime Minister, 5 minutes remaining.
We have a long line. I want to touch very briefly on the Diamo. In the 5 minutes, I have to express my disappointment because, you see, the member for Castries North proceeded to castigate the source of his advice on the Dahemol. That can never be an excuse, because you are Prime Minister, you head a cabinet, just like you castigated me because you felt I was the sole decision maker on Russia marriages. Never the truth. So too, you must be castigated for blaming the source of the advice. There was enough evidence along the way to indicate that investment was unjustified, would have been a burden, and the evidence does show that there were problems with the structure of the building and micropiling was necessary. Now, in the aftermath, the question is how you handle those things. And you can handle it by saying, look, an error was made. It wasn't a wise investment. And you know, if you had said that, that matter might have been closed. But you don't take that route. You don't take that route. You attract the source of the advice. And that's why you have a cabinet, because a cabinet has to weigh advice to decide whether it's going to accept or whether it's going to reject. That's my point earlier in drafting the budget. The Ministry of Finance gave advice, and there are certain things that we disagreed with. We went the direction we felt was necessary. And so, Mr. Speaker, we have to build a new future, and I'm heartened by the words of the Leader of the Opposition, despite my criticisms of his comments. And I want to make it very clear that while there are citizens on both sides who may have anxieties about cooperation between the government and the opposition, I just want to say that it's the future of our country we are talking about. We have all lived that past, and we know what that past yielded. And that cooperation is not just an issue solely of a relationship between a Prime Minister and Leader of the Opposition. The fact of the matter is that the Leader of the Opposition holds an office in our Constitution. It is the office that we need to respect. It is the office that we need to appreciate and recognize its importance in our democracy, not the individual that occupies it. Let us separate the individual from the office itself.
That's the point that I'd like to make. So, Mr. Speaker, let's go forth. And I want to thank you, and it remains now for me to thank all the secretaries in the Ministry of Finance, all of them. Sometimes it became necessary for them to go the extra mile to think out of the box in this very difficult situation. They did not disappoint. Sometimes, as I openly admit it, the advice is not accepted, but it was a coherent effort, and I want to thank them for all the support which was extended to me in crafting this budget. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Honourable members, the question is that the appropriation 2012-2013 bill be read a second time. I'll repeat this. Honourable members, the question is that the appropriation 2012-2013 bill be read a second time. I put the question. All those who are of that opinion say aye.
Aye.
All those who are of a contrary opinion say no. I think the ayes have it. The ayes have it. Clause 2. Clause 2 stands part of the bill. Clause 1. Clause 1 stands part of the bill. Honourable members, the question is that the committee rises and the bill be reported. I now put the question. As many as are of that opinion, say aye. As many as are of a contrary opinion, say no. I think the ayes have it. The ayes have it. Honourable members, I beg to report that the appropriation 2012-2013 bill went through committee stage with no amendments. Honourable member for Viewfort South, Prime Minister and Minister for Finance, Economic Affairs, Planning and Social Security.
Speaker, I beg to move that the chairman's report be adopted and that the bill be read as third chairman passed.
Honourable members, the question is that the report of the committee be adopted and that the appropriation 2012-2013 bill be read a third time and passed. I now put the question. As many as are of that opinion, say aye. As many as are of a contrary opinion, say no. I think the ayes have it. The ayes have it. Honorable Prime Minister.
Speaker, may I have your guidance very briefly? I understand that we had to complete the process for the appropriation bill, but is it that we're going to return to the motions now and then come back to the other bills, or do you go straight to the bill to start?
Motion.
Mr. Speaker, I beg to move the following motion standing in my name. Whereas it is provided by Section 29 of the Finance Administration Act, Cap 1501, that the Minister of Finance may by resolution of Parliament borrow money from a bank or other financial institution for capital expenditure of government. And whereas it is further provided by Section 42(1) of the said Act that they shall be charged upon and paid out of the consolidated fund their charges for which the government is liable. And whereas the Minister of Finance deems it necessary to borrow an amount not exceeding the equivalent of US$6,233,000 from the Caribbean Development Bank to assist government in financing the improvements of access to basic infrastructure and services for residents under the Program for the Regularization of Unplanned Development Fraud, and whereas the loan shall be allocated from the Caribbean Development Bank Special Funds Resources, and whereas the commission and commitment charge shall not apply to the loan, and whereas the loan is to be repaid in 80 equal or approximately equal and consecutive quarterly installments from each due date, commencing on the first due date after the expiration of 10 years, following the date of the loan agreement or such later date or such later due date as the Caribbean Development Bank may specify in writing, and whereas the interest on the loan shall be at a rate of 2.5% per annum on the amount of the principal withdrawn and outstanding from time to time to be paid on the due date, the first payment being due and payable on the first due date after the date of the first disbursement of the loan, be it resolved that Parliament authorizes the Minister of Finance to borrow an amount not exceeding the equivalent of US$6,233,000 from the Caribbean Development Bank to assist government in financing the improvement of access to basic infrastructure and services for residents under the Program for the Regularization of Unplanned Development Fraud Settlement Project. Mr. Speaker, I think this is so clear. Again, it's an initiative of the former government. As I said earlier, Mr. Speaker, I think initially the government, when it came into office, had lost some confidence and trust. It lay there for several years. But then they decided to revive it through this loan. So welcome project. This is great news for St. Lucians. We'll now have the opportunity again to begin to own the land on which they reside. And I think every member sitting around this table have problems. I know the member for Denry South has problems. The member for Miku North has problems. Miku South, Babono has problems. Beaufort North, Beaufort South, everywhere. So this is welcome. This is good news. And I want to urge honorable members to give this loan their fullest support. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Honorable members, the question is that Parliament authorizes the Minister for Finance to borrow an amount not exceeding the equivalent of US$6,233,000 from the Caribbean Development Bank to assist government in financing the improvement of access to basic infrastructure and services for residents under the Program for the Regularization of Unplanned Development, PROUD, Settlement Project. I now put the question. As many as are of that opinion, say aye. As many as are of a contrary opinion, say no. I think the ayes have it. The ayes have it. Honorable Prime Minister.
Speaker, I'd like to move the following motion standing in my name. Whereas it is provided by Section 38(1) of the Finance Administration Act, Cap. 1, that the Minister of Finance may by resolution of Parliament borrow money from a bank or other financial institution by means of advances for an amount not exceeding in the aggregate sum specified in the resolution to meet current requirements, and such resolution shall not have effect for any period exceeding 6 months. And whereas it is provided, further provided by Section 38(2) of the said Act, that the power conferred on the Minister of Finance to borrow money by means of advances from the bank may be exercised by means of a fluctuating overdraft. And whereas it is further provided by Section 42(1) of the said Act, that all debt charges from which the government is liable shall be charged upon and paid out of the consolidated fund. And whereas the Minister of Finance deems it necessary to borrow by means of advances from commercial banks sums not exceeding $35 million, be it resolved that Parliament authorizes the Minister of Finance to borrow by means of advances sums not exceeding $35 million from commercial banks, which sums shall be charged upon and paid out of the consolidated fund. Mr. Speaker, this resolution makes an appearance, I think, in the House every 6 months. There's a difference, though, on this occasion. And I know that the former Minister of Finance will remind me, but basically, the resolution in the past authorized $25 million. This time we are increasing it by $10 million to $35 million. The truth of the matter is that the amount of $25 million has been on the books for years. I'm sure well over 20 years. And obviously economic circumstances have changed. Requirements of the government are even greater, particularly for short-term financing. And I would say that successive governments have handled this overdraft exceedingly well. I don't think there has ever been a time that there has been any anxiety by any successive government about the overdraft and the levels of the overdraft. There have never been any complaints. And no modern business, as you know, can survive these days without an overdraft. So I want to point out that increasing it from 25 to 35, again, to meet the requirements of the times, but we come back in the House in another 6 months to get further approval to continue the overdraft. I say no more, Mr. Speaker. Thank you very much.
Honourable Members, the question is that Parliament authorizes the Minister for Finance to borrow by means of advances sums not exceeding $35 million from commercial banks, which sums shall be charged upon and paid out of the consolidated fund. I now put the question. As many as are of that opinion, say aye. As many as are of a contrary opinion, say no. I think the ayes have it. The ayes have it. Honorable Prime Minister.
Again, I'd like to present a following motion standing in my name. This motion should not bring any anxieties of any kind. It's rather a motion to congratulate the cooperative sector in our country. And I'm sure that honorable members would readily join in congratulating them and supporting the work that they do. I want to now read out the motion in its entirety. Whereas there are 16 cooperatives with 75,000 members in St. Lucia, and cooperatives there include credit unions, Mr. Speaker, and whereas cooperatives in St. Lucia make a substantial contribution to the economy of St. Lucia with assets in excess of EC 400 million, and whereas for the past 200 years, cooperatives, credit unions, and other forms of social business have strengthened and sustained national economies, such as that of St. Lucia, and whereas cooperatives are a major economic force in developed countries and a powerful business model in developing countries, including St. Lucia, protecting 100 million jobs and the livelihoods of a billion members worldwide, and whereas the economic activity of the largest of 300 cooperatives in the world is equal to that of the 10th largest national economy, and whereas cooperatives are the business of the people and for more than a century have been a vital part of the world economy, and whereas United Nations Resolution 64136 adopted by the General Assembly on December 18, 2009 designates the year 2012 as the International Year of Cooperatives in recognition of the role that cooperatives play in economic and social development, And whereas the theme of the International Day of Cooperatives is Cooperative Enterprises Build a Better World, and whereas a National Committee for the 2012 International Year of Cooperatives, comprising representatives from relevant government agencies, all cooperative sectors, and key stakeholders, will be established in St. Lucia. Be it resolved that Parliament accepts the decision of the United Nations to recognize the major role that cooperatives play in economic and social development by designating 2012 as the International Year of Cooperatives, recognizes the importance of facilitating a favorable climate for cooperative development, raising the profile of cooperatives and demonstrating the manner by which cooperatives build local wealth, generate employment, and provide competition in the marketplace, recognizes the vital role cooperatives play in the economic and social well-being of St. Lucia, supports the establishment of a national committee for the 2012 International Year of Cooperatives, comprising government, representatives of each relevant government, government agency, all cooperative sectors and key stakeholders, encourage the highlighting of the positive impact of cooperatives and the development of new programs for domestic and international cooperative development, congratulate cooperatives and members of cooperatives in St. Lucia and around the world on the United Nations recognition of 2012 as the International Year of Cooperatives. This really is laudable. The cooperatives in our country have done us proud exceedingly well. And I'm sure there are persons here who are members of the cooperative movement, particularly credit unions. I want to take the opportunity on behalf of the government to congratulate the cooperative sector. I know that these are very challenging times for them. They are concerned about all kinds of development, including the new regulatory financial framework. But I don't think they need fear, because in the breast of every member who's here tonight is tremendous sympathy, support, understanding, and appreciation that the cooperative sector has of the work of the cooperative sector in our country. So I want to congratulate them, and of course to extend our greetings and best wishes for a very successful year. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Honourable members, the question is that Parliament congratulates cooperatives and members of cooperatives in St. Lucia and around the world on the United Nations recognition of 2012 as the International Year of Cooperatives. Honourable member for Cass Street North.
Two on the island, and I think it's one that I would recommend for every member to participate in the cooperative movement. Thank you.
Honourable members, the question is that Parliament congratulates cooperatives and members of cooperatives in St. Lucia and around the world on the United Nations recognition of 2012 as the International Year of Cooperatives. I now put the question. As many as are of that opinion, say aye. As many as are of a contrary opinion, say no. I think the ayes have it. The ayes have it. Bills. Honourable Prime Minister.
Mr. Speaker, I beg to move the first reading of a bill shortly entitled National Savings and Development Bond.
A National Savings and Development Bond Amendment.
Honourable Prime Minister.
Mr. Speaker, I beg to move for the suspension of Standing Order Number 48, Sub Order 2, to enable this bill to go through its remaining stages of the sitting.
Honourable members, the question is that Standing Order number 48, subsection 2, be suspended in order to allow the Honourable Prime Minister to proceed with the remaining stages of the bill at this sitting. I now put the question. As many as are of that opinion, say aye. As many as are of a contrary opinion, say no. I think the ayes have it. The ayes have it. Leave is granted. Proceed, Honourable Prime Minister.
Mr. Speaker, I know that honourable members will be very tired. It's been two very hectic days. But just to indicate that this bill was circulated very early in the session, and what has happened here today is that the items have been brought together. For example, yesterday, all these items did not appear on the order paper, but just the items for that session. So I just want to clarify that, because this is not anything new. That having been said, Mr. Speaker, here the authority of Parliament has been requested to increase the level of the savings bonds that Solution would make available to the region up to $1.4 billion. That has become necessary because we are exceedingly close to the current level, and I think honourable members would be aware that it is exceedingly critical that we move quickly to raise the money that we need, not only to pay for the projects occasioned by Hurricane Thomas, but the other program of the government. I have to tell Parliament that the marketplace is exceedingly difficult, and I believe that members adverted to it, for example, in the presentation of the Leader of the Opposition, the point was made about the situation in St. Kitts. It is a new environment, and it is not as easy as it used to be a couple of years ago to raise funds in the marketplace. But the good thing is that if we handle our affairs well and continue to ensure that we jealously guard the reputation of the future, I believe that there is every possibility that we'll be able to raise the finance that we need at this time. But it is not an easy environment. It is delicate. It is very difficult. We would have to manage it very, very carefully. But a good thing, too, is that there's a healthy body of experience in managing such funds. So I believe that all will end well at the end of this. So I commend this bill to members of the House.
Honourable members, the question is that the National Savings and Development Bonds Amendment Bill be read a second time. I now put the question. As many as are of that opinion, say aye. As many as are of the contrary opinion, say no. I think the ayes have it. The ayes have it.
An Act to amend the National Savings and Development Bonds Act, Chapter 15.25.
Clause 2.
Amendment of Section 3.
Clause 2 stands part of the bill. Clause 1.
A short title.
Clause 1 stands part of the bill. Honourable members, the question is that the committee rises and the bill be reported. I now put the question. As many as are of that opinion, say aye. As many as are of a contrary opinion, say no. I think the ayes have it. The ayes have it. Honourable members, I beg to report that the National Savings and Development Bonds Amendment Bill went through committee stage with no amendments. Honourable Prime Minister.
Mr. Speaker, I beg to move that the Chairman's report be adopted and the bill read a third time and passed.
Honourable members, the question is that the report of the committee be adopted and that the National Savings and Development Bonds Amendment Bill be read a third time and passed. I now put the question. As many as are of that opinion, say aye. As many as are of a contrary opinion, say no. I think the ayes have it. The ayes have it.
Be it enacted by the Queen's Most Excellent Majesty, by and with the advice and consent of the House of Assembly and the Senate of St. Lucia, and by the authority of the same as follows, this act may be cited as the National Savings and Development Bond Amendment Act 2012.
Honourable Prime Minister.
Speaker, I beg to move, or I beg to present the first reading of bill shortly entitled Registered Agent and Trustee Licensing Amendment.
The Registered Agent and Trustee Licensing Amendment.
Honourable Prime Minister.
Speaker, I beg to move that this bill be presented a second reading at the next or subsequent sitting of the Honourable House.
Honourable members, the question is that the Registered Agent and Trustee Licensing Amendment Act be read at a second or subsequent meeting of the House. I now put the question. As many as are of that opinion, say aye. As many as are of a contrary opinion, say no. I think the ayes have it. The ayes have it. Honourable Prime Minister.
I think I'd like to present the first reading of bill shortly entitled Value Added Tax.
Value Added Tax.
Honourable Prime Minister. Honourable members, the question is that the bill entitled the Value Added Tax be presented at the next or subsequent meeting of this House. I now put the question. As many as are of that opinion, say aye. As many as are of a contrary opinion, say no. I think the ayes have it. The ayes have it. Honourable Prime Minister.
The International Tax Corporation Bill.
Honourable Prime Minister.
Mr. Speaker, I beg to move that this bill be presented a second reading at the next or subsequent sitting of this Honourable House.
Honourable members, the question is that the International Tax Corporation Bill be presented for second reading at the next or subsequent meeting of this Honourable House. I now put the question. As many as are of that opinion, say aye. As many as are of a contrary opinion, say no. I think the ayes have it. The ayes have it. Honorable Prime Minister.
Mr. Speaker, I beg to move that this Honorable House stands adjourned. Sign it, aye.
Honourable members, the question is that this House do stand adjourned, sign a die. I now put the question. As many as are of that opinion, say aye. As many as are of a contrary opinion, say no. I think the ayes have it. The ayes have it. Sitting adjourned.